If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
It is 11 minutes after 12. You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, so you're going out Christmas shopping or grocery shopping or clothes shopping or whatever. Is it good for you to try to find vendors who agree with you politically or religiously? Should you try to find a Christian shop or a Muslim shop or a Jewish shop or a left-handed shop? Is that the idea that we should be about these days? Well, there's a group called Faith-Driven Consumers, and the founder is Chris Stone, and he joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
And so, you know, this all comes up because of the, well, first of all, you came out with your index last week as sort of nice timing, and then we had this Starbucks kerfuffle about the fact that there are not direct Christmas symbols on the Starbucks cups this year. But tell me a little bit about Faith-Driven Consumers and what the organization is about.
Well, Faith-Driven Consumers as a community are 41 million Americans, 17% of the U.S. adult population, who, despite the fact that they come from all types of backgrounds colors, creeds, etc., they have one thing in common, and that is a biblical worldview. They are united by their faith. And as faith-driven consumers, 70% of them are actively looking for brands who will engage them as such. Not a unique phenomenon. Most of the communities in America are dealing with the marketplace in a similar fashion.
Right. And so tell me then, you have this faith-based index where people can go on the website and check out a company that they may or may not be interested in shopping with and see how they rank according to standards that you've set up.
Absolutely. Our Faith Equality Index is a great tool for providing anybody an opportunity to look and see not only which companies are most faith compatible, but to also look at how those companies deal with whether it be the African American, the Hispanic, or the LGBT communities as well. So it gives you a broad spectrum of how companies are dealing with communities with a significant focus on faith-driven consumers.
Right. So I want to sort of restate what you just said because it struck me a little bit. When you go on your site and choose a company and check out their ranking according to your standards, you can also click on the rankings for four other groups: Black Enterprises, Hispanic Association of Corporate Responsibility, or the Human Rights Campaign's Corporate Equality Index, which rates LGBT compatibility. So you've got a variety of them there. Now, Chris, my idea is that maybe a lot of the Christian shoppers might not be guided by what the LGBT index would say. I mean, is there a bit of a conflict there?
No, actually, what the purpose of that is to show the similarity or the contrast between how companies are interacting with faith-driven consumers and how they're interacting with these other communities. What we have is a marketplace that has a claim of distinction. Almost all of the large American brands talk about diversity and inclusion. They're equal, and they treat everybody equally, and they embrace everybody. But when you really look at it, you see that their embrace and their engagement of faith-driven consumers is behind the curve on these other communities. And, you know, shame on us as faith-driven consumers because we haven't advocated strong enough for that kind of engagement, and shame on those brands. So our purpose is to inform consumers so that they can encourage brands to engage them at a level of parity with those other groups. We're looking to be added in to the marketplace's rainbow of diversity.
So,
and that's why those are all there.
So, okay. So then maybe it's not quite as I saw it on its face. The fact that you have the rating from the LGBT group might, in fact, be used as an indictment of the company. Look, they score very high in this index, but very low in ours.
Well, I don't know that I would call it an indictment. It's an example of how inclusive they are capable of being and their desire to be. It's actually a proof point that their intentions for diversity and inclusion are good. And what we have found is they just haven't operationalized that. They have not engaged faith-driven consumers as fully. So you could use it as a positive and say, these people are open and willing to engage. Here's an example. So when I go and look at it, I go, oh, I have hope. They will embrace me too. So you could look at it both ways, and we're really taking it as a positive approach, which is why we're doing a boycott to reward companies that do it well.
Boycott is the idea that you're encouraging your members to shop at places that have a particularly pro-Christian position.
Absolutely, and that's a positive point. Besides which, if I say, hey, let's boycott a certain company,
right,
then the question is, where can I shop?
All right, I got a couple of things, and I want to do it before we get out of time. But first, let's go to Starbucks. You know, Starbucks is under fire because they, I don't know that they ever had religious symbols on their cups, their holiday cups, but this year they are just a holiday sort of red. No snowflakes, no reindeer, no trees, nothing like that. What do you make of that situation?
Well, as we have said in countless press pieces, everybody has the ability to create what kind of ever kind of cup that they want. I think the underlying question is Starbucks trying to neutralize Christmas?
Right, and that's what I'm asking you. Do you think they are?
Well, if you look at their score at a 27, they are not making a lot of headway with engaging the Christian community.
Okay.
Do I know what's in their heart? I don't know. But it would appear that they're trying to take the religious element out of Christmas.
But, I'm looking across the street at a Starbucks, and truth be told, I'm holding a Starbucks cup in my hand. It's a very nice red cup. I just came from there 20 minutes ago. Right now, the windows are completely covered in holly decorations. They're advertising their Christmas blend, which they do every year. I mean, it doesn't seem to me that they've made much of a change this year. I mean, I don't know. I just think I support the idea that you guys should shop where you want to shop and support people who support you, but I just think too much is being made of this.
Well, you know, perhaps it is, perhaps it's not. We look at it at a much more global level. Are they engaging faith-driven consumers globally 365 days a year? And as the score indicates, they currently are not. We are very open to establishing a relationship with Starbucks if they're willing. And at this point, we're reaching out to them to determine if they are. The Christmas cup is just a moment in history. It is an indication of a trend, and we'll see where that plays out. If they are willing to engage faith-driven consumers, then we'll put them on the boycott list.
All right. That is Chris Stone, the founder of Faith-Driven Consumers. People can find more information about your index at faithequalityindex.com. Chris, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Be well. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Let's get a look at traffic. Here is Dolly McCarthy. It's 12:23 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Thursday afternoon. A little gloomy today, but Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management is here to brighten our day. Right, Bill?
Absolutely, sir.
So I don't know if you heard that earlier segment, but we were talking to a group that said, you know, they want to shop where there are pro-Christian sort of mentalities. And it made me think there was a real movement not too long ago about earth-friendly mutual funds or, you know, mutual funds that didn't invest in particular governments or areas. Is that still active or is it?
I never hear that.
Really?
No, I don't. What's on people's minds rather than being earth-friendly right now is retirement friendly. People are really concerned and really worried about their retirement.
So it's the sort of thing that there was a luxury to have when things were going well, right? When things were booming in the 90s.
Yeah, and exactly.
Now it's just the bottom line.
Now it's just the bottom line. You know, and frankly, there's a lot to worry about right now. The Fed is actively talking about increasing interest rates in December. We already have a weak economy. And that could knock the knees out from underneath the economy and the stock market as well.
So one of the things I know that you talk about when it comes to investing and knowing where you are is to sort of figure out how much risk you're sitting at, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the good? How do we do that?
Well, you know, that's a big problem right now, Steve. Folks come into the office and generally they're 5 to 10 years out from retirement. And we do a series of analysis. One is a very sophisticated Morningstar analysis of risk. And invariably, people have a lot more risk than what they're aware of, and certainly a lot more risk than they should have this close to retirement. I'll give you an example. We had a couple come in the office late yesterday afternoon, really nice couple talking about coming on board, and we did an analysis of their portfolio. Their portfolio is about $1.3 million, and we found out through Morningstar. Morningstar says the next time we go through another 2008, this couple's going to lose 45 to 50% of what they have.
Right.
Now, imagine a loss in your portfolio of over $500,000. How long have you worked to save up that $500,000?
Okay, but so 2008 was a great anomaly, right? I mean,
no,
you don't want to.
No, it's not.
No?
No. 2001, people said, was a great anomaly. And then 5 years later, we had another one. The fact of the matter is the market is becoming a lot more volatile. The Fed has been pumping up the market with artificially low interest rates. And as they start increasing them again, I walked in the studio this morning. The market was down 200 points.
Right.
It was down huge last Friday. And a lot of folks are really worried that an increase in interest rates is really going to slow the economy and consequently an overheated stock market.
All right, so once you figure out where your risk is and you decide that maybe it's too much for you,
right,
what do you do?
Well, there's three things. First of all, you need to make sure your portfolio is balanced. And people have got an over-concentration of stock-based mutual funds right now. So it needs to be more balanced. You also have to begin creating income for your retirement, which has kind of fallen by the wayside. I mean, how do you live in retirement? Social Security is not enough. You have to have income. So the second thing is start creating income. And the third thing is you still want growth, absolutely, but you want to make sure that it's protected growth. Instead of thinking growth, 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 you think protection and then growth.
Well, there's got to be a balance, right? I mean,
you don't want to
put too much in just the growth.
That's correct.
So I guess we have to look in our crystal ball and see when we're going to die and figure out exactly how much money we need?
No. What you need to do is you need to understand really where you're at in your portfolio, lower the risk, and you want to create a portfolio that's almost bulletproof, because sooner or later there's another 2008 coming, whether it's this month, this year, next year, whenever. And when that happens, there's no big signs are going to be held in the air that it is happening. It's just going to happen. So if you're 5 years away from retirement, 10 years away, now's the time to really, and what better time to reduce your risk? At the top of the market?
Right.
Or at the bottom of the market?
So people want more information from you. I know you have a blog, right, that they can get a hold of.
We have a weekly blog. It's called growmyretirement.com. You can go there to sign up, growmyretirement.com. And, you know, in kind of closing, Steve, I would really, really encourage people, if you're 5 years out, certainly from retirement, sit down, understand how much risk you have, and if necessary, do something about it.
That's Bill Geiger. Thanks for coming in. We'll talk to you again next week. Remember, you can sign up for Bill's weekly retirement planning blog. It's right here. I didn't realize I was going to say it. At growmyretirement.com. Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management is offering a great opportunity for listeners today. He'll sit down with you personally to create a full-blown financial plan for your retirement. It's a $3,000 value. Geiger Wealth is offering this plan complimentary, no charge, to the next five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for their retirement. Just call Geiger Wealth at 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. Geiger Wealth Management will translate the complex financial planning process into easy-to-understand steps. It's a full-blown financial plan analyzing not only where you are today, but most importantly, a roadmap to get you to where you need to be. So for the next five callers with at least $500,000 saved for retirement, Geiger Wealth is offering a complimentary financial plan. Call 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. Insurance products offered through DeBlanco, Inc., licensed in Illinois.
Those very own 720 WGN.
It's 12:38. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand and Suzanne Muchin is along as well. She's a co-host for The Big Payoff, a podcast you can hear at WGN Plus, and they look at women in business. Suzanne.
Hey, Steve.
And on Facebook, just about an hour or so ago, Suzanne promised that she would call me.
I promised publicly to the many friends we both have that I would refer to you as WGN's dreamy heartthrob.
Thank you very much.
Which, the fact that you're wearing that fabulous vest makes it all kind of real.
I got this vest in Ireland. Thank you very much.
Looks good.
I'm sorry. Tell me again. What was it you called me? Okay.
So explain the source of this.
So this comes from the dreamy heartthrob, new Prime Minister of Canada, I don't know his first name.
Justin
Trudeau, Pierre Trudeau's son, was just recently elected Prime Minister. And he said flat out, boom, I'm going to have a 50-50 cabinet when it comes to gender.
Yes. And he did. And he named them. And what was great was he said, I want a cabinet that reflects the Canadian population. I want a cabinet that looks like Canada. And when someone in the audience said to him, well, okay, but why the gender equality? He said, because it's 2015.
Yeah. And so are they all wearing stockings? I mean, so many jokes.
So many jokes. Like Canada. So many jokes if they look like Canada. But the real thing, so you send this article and I'm assuming you're what? Supportive? I'm supportive. This is a great idea.
I'm totally supportive if it happens naturally. I'm not supportive of it happening by numbers, right? If I may quote now my great political philosopher, mm-hmm. Donald Trump.
You're not. You're not going to go here.
What?
Go ahead.
No, Donald Trump was asked about this today or yesterday or something. And he said kind of what I think. He said, I would never do that. He said, because I want the best person for the job. And I wouldn't, you know, constrain myself by saying, I've got 8 women. I need a man now, when the woman might have been the best person for that.
And you're assuming that the women he picked weren't as qualified as potential male counterparts?
What do you mean?
Meaning, how do we know that the cabinet that he picked, just because it happens to be half women, in any way compromised?
Oh, no, I don't think he did. No, I don't mean to imply that at all.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, say the position of Treasury Secretary, I don't know what their ministers, what their situations are, right? And say that the position of Treasury Minister is open.
Yes.
And he's got 8 women in the cabinet and 7 men.
Yes.
Okay, so according to his rules, he's got to pick a man to even it out. And I'm saying, what if there's a woman who's better? I don't, you know, and you could flip it, obviously.
So you could think of it that way. I'd take it in a slightly different direction, which is to say, if you actually want to create a cabinet that reflects the population, that requires a whole lot of strategy, right? Because it's not just about gender. It's about ethnicity or potentially sexual orientation. That, in today's world, takes intent and intention. We may not like it that it seems like there's a count,
right?
But that's probably true. But let's also go to the reason that I called you the heartthrob in the first place. And you are. I'm not taking that away from you.
Go on. Over Yun? Better than Yun?
Yun, he's just a different generation than we are.
True.
Right?
Much different.
Let's just acknowledge
that.
So
you took issue that he was described as a heartthrob?
The Slate reporter who reports on this, who's a guy, shall we just clarify that, refers him in the first line as Canadian's dreamy heartthrob of a prime minister. It's like, how in a world where you're trying to promote or perhaps bring attention to gender equality, are you using that term to describe the leader of your country?
That hadn't occurred to me.
I know it didn't, Steve. That's the beauty of our
And that's because
segment.
I know you focus on this like a laser beam.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Glamour magazine.
Yes.
And their woman of the year.
Yeah.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Right.
And Bill and Wendy were talking about this earlier on WGN, and I guess Jenner was asked about the hardest thing about being a woman, and he said choosing what to wear.
Right.
That's unbelievable.
Unbelievable, right? And this is, look, there are two camps here. On the one hand, you could say Caitlin, she has done a lot for gender equality, for focus on LGBT issues and transgender issues, and that's great. But the point that many women, at least those in my circle, are saying is, she might have been a woman on the inside for many years and felt that way, but has lived for the last, I don't know, how old is she now? 60-something years?
I really don't even know.
I think 60-something,
really?
Right? as a man, meaning she really hasn't experienced life as a woman. She hasn't had discrimination. She hasn't had anyone saying, you know, how come you don't stay home and take care of your kids? She hasn't experienced income inequality. So we're putting her on this pedestal as if she can be the woman of the year. The of the year part, I don't have an issue with. It's putting her up above all other women in that category.
You know, what's interesting to me is when you point out the things that she didn't experience, they're all negatives, right? She didn't experience the joy of childbirth. She didn't.
True.
You know what I mean?
It's a good way to look at it. Although I would say that many of the women recognized for these kinds of awards have overcome some kind of adversity or are championing some kind of cause, right? They're not just being celebrated because they, you know, gave birth to a child.
Right. Well, it's just fascinating, too, because it's like, well, we now take transgender people and identify them as their new gender very early on. And it's like, well, when do you stop? Because if you presumably don't stop with the Woman of the Year award if you don't stop elsewhere.
Correct. And I'm worried that we're taking this whole transformation that she's undergone and acting as if this were something that, you know, took place quite a long time ago.
All right. That's Caitlyn Jenner. And you know that image of the boy living in his parents' basement playing video games? Throw it out the window. There's a Pew Research poll out.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated by these numbers because I thought it was so high. The number of women ages 18 to 34 who lived with their relatives or parents in 2014.
Yeah.
I would have guessed like 12, 15%.
I would have too. I would have said somewhere around 10 to 15%.
And it's 36%.
36%. So these are millennials, right? They're 18 to 34, and they've lived with their parents for some period of time. We don't know how long. And the other thing that's fascinating about this Pew study is that the number of men is on the decline. The men who are living at home are boys. Emerging adult men.
Right.
But the number of young women is on the rise, right? This is the highest number being reported since, I think they said, 1940.
Right. And so a couple of things. One is that so men and women lived with their parents a lot longer ago. In the 40s, I mean, it was much more likely. I think it was 47% of men living with their parents in the 40s.
Right.
I said, okay, so we've got this number. It's going up for women a little bit. Men going down. Men still lead.
Yep.
As if it's a competition. But what's behind this?
Right. So I took my first glance at the study, thought, wow, that's really bad news. Women living at home and being so dependent on their parents. But it's actually for good reason, in part because they're getting married later. They're entering the workforce because they've a little later because they've both gone to college and potentially gotten a secondary degree. Those are good things happening to women. They just haven't figured out the economy around how they're going to pay for their room and board.
So if the number of women living in the basement is going up and it's good news for them.
Yes.
Do we need to reassess the loser men who are living in the basement?
Well, maybe the loser status should be put to bed altogether.
Transition in either
way. Right,
transition.
Actually, it's interesting. I heard from someone that you really are still considered an adolescent physiologically until you're closer to being about 27.
Well, so you've only got 2 years left.
Thank you.
Suzanne Muchen, you called me a heartthrob, so I owed you that.
I'll keep doing it.
Co-host.
Makes you so happy.
Of the Big Payoff at WGN Plus. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. 12:53 on the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Thursday afternoon. Jason Lesnevich is here from Choose Chicago. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And I'm so excited. I mean, I don't think you knew this about me, but when I was a kid, I was a ventriloquist, and I, you know, took a lot of classes, and you know, I always kind of felt alone because there weren't a lot of other ventriloquists around. And now I see there's a ventriloquist convention coming to Chicago this week, and I'm really excited about that.
I'm glad you're excited. You know, it's not a true convention. Though,
what?
Unfortunately, it is a play based.
It's a play
at MCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art.
So there aren't other ventriloquists going to be?
There aren't, but the play is based on a real ventriloquist convention.
Can I
so
bring
you do have a chance to attend one.
Okay, good. So can I bring my dummy maybe? Or
you sure can.
Or Jan, maybe Jan will come. Right.
That's right.
All right, tell me about the show.
So it is based on a true convention that happens in Kentucky every year at the Vent Haven Museum, which is the world's only museum for ventriloquists. But this is a play. It's based on that annual gathering of ventriloquists where there's nine delegates and their dummies share their passions and expose their private challenges. It's a casual conversation that quickly becomes an alarming psychological maze.
When you said they expose their private, I wasn't sure where you were going to go with that.
But, yeah, okay. Private lives.
All right, so we're going to move on from there because more holiday stuff coming up.
Yeah, it is the holiday season, of course.
The skating rink opens up tomorrow?
Tomorrow at Millennium Park. Their skating rink does open. It's a great rink. You know, it's right underneath the Bean, and it happens every winter. And
everything's going to the Bean now, Jason.
That's
right. Christmas tree's going over there, you know. No one's going to go in the Loop anymore.
I know. I feel a little, some people feel bad about the Christmas tree,
but I think
it's a great location right there in Millennium Park, right next to the ice rink. So while you're skating, you know, take in the beautiful tree that I guess is coming down from Northbrook.
Northfield.
Yeah,
don't upset the people of Northfield. Really, you've never seen anyone upset until you upset the people from Northfield. All right, so we got the rink opening tomorrow. A Christmas Carol, Charlie Brown Christmas, they're both opening up this weekend.
Yeah, Christmas Carol's huge over at the Goodman Theater. They've been doing it since 1978, the great Charles Dickens story about Ebenezer Scrooge. It's a holiday tradition for so many families.
But I want to hear about Chill Fest because this is something I don't know much about.
Yeah, Chill Fest, I believe it's their second year. It might be their third over in Wicker Park, Bucktown, and this is 100 individual concerts will be performed over one day on Saturday, November 14th. These are acoustic sets. They go anywhere from 20 to 60 minute long at about 30 different storefronts throughout the neighborhood. So if you like music, live music, go to Wicker Park, spend the day there, check out all the great artists, and grab a bite to eat, and have a good day.
That sounds like it. And that's this weekend.
That
correct?
Is Saturday, the 14th.
I think
correct.
We're going to have a fairly dry weekend, so that's nice.
I know. It's looking pretty nice.
Although in Wicker Park, it's very hard to have a dry weekend. By the way, Jan just corrected me. The Christmas tree's coming from North Lake, so I jumped on you, and
nice.
I apologize for that.
Wow!
And then one other in the north side of town, mm-hmm. this Vintage Garage Chicago,
yeah.
which sounds something that I would be interested in, but again, I completely misread it. I thought it was a car show.
I know.
But it's not
a
car show.
It's strictly a vintage market, about 100 vintage dealers from around the Midwest specializing in vinyl, art, vintage furniture, clothing, whatever, is having their holiday market this Saturday.
So is it like a flea market or...?
It's more of like a market where you can interact with the individual dealers.
Right.
It's sort of like a flea market, yeah.
And so what kind of stuff you can find old albums?
Well, it's
going
to be their holiday market, obviously.
Okay.
Everyone's starting to do their holiday shopping. So ornaments, all sorts of, you know, ornaments, decorations, figurines, toys, lighting, what have you.
And so is it a regular thing up there?
It happens once a month.
Okay.
So this is their holiday market. This will close out their season. They'll start back up, I believe, in early spring, around April.
Excellent. So that's the Vintage Garage
and that
Chicago.
Is Sunday, November 15th at 5051 North Broadway.
Well, there you go. You've got to find something to do within all that. You can go skating, go see Christmas Carol.
Hear great music.
Go buy old clothes. Right. And end up at Wicker Park. Nice to see you.
You too.
Jason Lesnevich from Choose Chicago.